moved from the Cold War to remediating the environment to now to nonproliferation and who knows what will be next, that we maintain that cutting-edge science, technology, and innovation that allows us to be ahead of that curve. And that's really what the National Laboratory brings, not just to the site, but as a national and international resource. So what do we need? Well, we have some challenges. We have to certainly, you know, we talk about our license to operate here in South Carolina, and that strong community support for nuclear operations is critical to the future, realizing this future success. And we also need you to help us convince Washington that this is not a closure site, that what we have here are things that have are needed and will be needed for many years to come. And we've got to invest in the infrastructure to make sure that the capabilities of the infrastructure are equal to that of the capabilities of our people so we can really achieve these missions. And that, you know, those are big challenges, I believe, for us that we need, you know, very much appreciate your help with. Now, of course, the opportunities are in having truly enduring and growing missions here, enhancing even the science, technology, and innovation so that we can spawn new commercial entities. Shelley gave us a good plug there about our ability to use this innovation to create new private sector industry. And we've had, we talked about the medical isotope as one example. We have a new company located here in state now that uses microwave technology to decontaminate materials. That was an invention from the laboratory. There are a number of these where we're now beginning to get companies spinning out and setting up here in South Carolina so that they can take advantage of that. Allows us stronger partnerships with the academic community throughout, you know, the K-12 mentoring all the way to strong research partnerships with our universities. And then, you know, finally, the overall benefit to the economic health of the region. And, you don't have to look very far. You can just look, a few hundred miles north to Oak Ridge, where they have really, you know, utilized the laboratory to build a strong economic foundation for that region. I think we're on a good path to do the same thing here, but it will take the same kind of concerted support that they had for us to carry that through. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Questions? I have a couple. Okay. I sometimes forget that the Department of Energy is not just about nuclear weapons. My question is, does the rest of the department, the non-nuclear offices in DOE, do they come to you and ask you for support? I mean, there are things you could do for them. Is there a way to make that happen?
We work with quite a few offices in the Department of Energy, not just environmental management. Obviously, we work closely with the NNSA. But with the EERE, which is the energy efficiency and renewable energy side. On the natural gas, it's with the fossil energy. Our work on the fuel cycle is with nuclear energy. So we probably work with about six or seven different offices in the Office of Science, which provides a lot of underpinning fundamental work. So that, no, you're absolutely right. And part of it is just us being recognized as someone who delivers value. And that's a growing, I think we're seeing more and more of that.
Thank you. My next question is more along your, some of these things take years to develop, to get people to understand how important they are. So when you look in short term, what are you going to focus on? And then further out, long term, does your strategic plan focus on in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, we're going to develop this, and then this is what we hope to do in the future?
Yeah, we so in our planning, we look at a 10-year strategic plan, but we tend to focus more on 5-year objectives. And my feeling about that is, if it's something I expect is going to be happening in 5 years, I better be working on it today.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are, so you know, things like advancing our tritium role for the complex is something we're working today. You know, you've heard some of the examples of advanced chemical processing for nuclear materials. There are big opportunities there. We're working that today to set the stage for that for the future. So the natural gas is one that we think we could end up with a national center for natural gas storage here in South Carolina on that sort of 5-year time frame. So absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Terry, one of the things you talked about, and Savannah River a long time, and it's not a closure site, but I'm worried about it being a closure workforce. What's the average age of someone working at SRNL?
Yeah, we have a pretty strong peak around 52.
Yeah.
You know, that's we're not alone in this.
No.
You look across the...
Look around the room.
It's yeah. Very, very true. And, well, I mean...
I can see you.
Right. but, I mean, we're not alone in this in the complex.
No.
And it's why it is even more important for us to have, you know, cutting-edge, innovation-based science programs that will attract younger people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, maybe it's a bit of a bait and switch, but I've worked in National Lab long enough to know that it's hard to recruit someone in to work in a super-secret program. Right, it just, they don't know what it is, it doesn't...
Oh, you can't tell them.
But once they've been there for a while, it's really exciting, and they can't stay away from it. But you have to get them in the door. And frankly, I'd like to have about a 10-15% energy programs, because it's mm-hmm. a real good attractor, and allows us to do that kind of work, especially when we're partnered with universities, because we build that connection right away.
Yeah.
But it's clearly an objective, not just for the laboratory, but for the entire site and for the M&O contractor to have a strategic plan for the workforce that allows us to recruit and bring in that next generation. And because if you wait too long... You waited too long, and that expertise is already left. So, you know, it's an excellent point.
Following up on that, I was thinking about just the hot cells, just, you know, the high-level caves, and just how long does it take to train an operator and maintain that kind of skill or expertise? I mean, there are plenty of things like that that are really unique at the site, and that I was wondering, you know, like what if there are any programs that you have just specifically looking at the workforce?
Yeah, there are programs that we have that you know, help our newer workforce see the bigger picture. One of the problems is you come in new and you only see the thing you're working on. And so, under Dwayne Wilson's leadership, we've established some programs that really help our younger workforce kind of have a social network and get to learn more about the opportunities across the site. And I think that's really important. But I think we're also balancing here between continuing to train people to do things the way we always used to and learning to do things in different ways that require a different kind of training. And one of the things I'm kind of famous for is saying that if I have a car that can park itself, why do I need an operator to do this? Have we asked ourselves those questions mm-hmm. about how, and the next generation of workforce is going to want to work on that thing that lets a car park itself as opposed to learning, and so we have to balance those two. We have to, you know, obviously in a nuclear business, we have to have really trusted approaches and procedures. But we must force ourselves to look at what the future might look like and how we are going to present that future in a way that we're going to bring in the people who will invent it. And the thing I have to remember, you know, it was interesting. We had a every we give out an award for our top. It's like a sustained achievement award at the laboratory, the Don Orth Award. And I was telling Karen about this, that Don Orth came to the celebration this year. He arrived on the site in 1951 as a freshly minted PhD from Berkeley, and they were inventing everything that was done out there. And so we need to have some of that spirit back, because there's plenty of room to invent what will be the best way to do it in the future. And so I think it's that balance between making sure we maintain the competencies that build on our strength, that from, you know, historical strength, but that we are open to new ways of doing things that will really change the landscape.
Thank you very much, Terry. Always
Thanks.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Time for public comments.
No one signed up.
If y'all would come up and introduce yourself, and then just tell me whether you're talking to us or to Alex, that would help either one of us.
You're right. It's incredibly hot in here. Of course, I still have a coat on, but I'm sorry. My name is Susan Corbett. I am currently not the chair of the South Carolina chapter of the Sierra Club because we haven't elected our officers yet for the coming year. So right now I'm just on the board, the chapter board. We'll elect officers next. I can't seem to get off that damn board. But anyway, I'm here today. I just want to make a few comments. I just want to make a comment about the meeting process that bothers me, probably bothers other members of the public too. I think that we should be allowed to ask to question the presenters as they come, because a lot of times they leave and they're not here and they can't answer the questions that the public has. And this is, after all, the public's council. I mean, you work for the governor who works for the people, so this really is the people's council. And you're here to protect the interests of the people of South Carolina. This is not the industry council. So I think it would be better for the people if there's more access to ask questions of the people as they come up and present. And I would like to maybe entertain that idea. I know we run long, but it doesn't seem fair to the public to limit our time. I think, and maybe someone comes just to speak on or listen to a particular presentation that they've seen on the agenda and they just have questions about that, but they have to sit for 3 hours, which is, you know, but anyway, just entertain that idea of maybe allowing a question. I think they do it at the CAB meetings, you know, they'll take a break and they'll ask questions at a certain point, you know, people that have had presentations. For example, today I would have liked to ask some questions about Barnwell. I guess you guys know the Sierra Club has intervened, and one of the reasons we intervened is because we were concerned about the leaking. If you look around the country, you'll see that all low-level sites have leaked around the country. Maxie Flats, Sheffield, Beatty, they're all leaking. They all leaked, and they're all costing taxpayers money to clean up and remediate. And this is what we saw. We had seen it, and we were worried about it. And as we were seeing, it's still leaking. And in fact, as I was sitting here, and I would have asked her if I could have, on that page that she handed out, the last two wells, which are off-site, have been trending upward for a while. So I would like to know why. And also I would like to know why they're not tracking cesium, because cesium is water soluble, is it not?
No.
It's not water soluble?
It's life-fulfilling.
Okay. Well, I would like to know what other things are being tracked. I mean, I have some questions to her. So I just think that, I mean, you know, we're concerned about that, and that's why we continue to question the practices there, and we're going to continue to do that. So anyway, I just wanted to make those comments. You know, when they were considering when we were part of the original compact and they were supposed to move to North Carolina, they were going to build an above-ground monitored retrievable storage site. They weren't going to bury it in the ground. So, anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you. I got to run. My meter's expired.
Thanks, Susan.
Good afternoon. This won't be too long. I'm not addressing this to Mr. Klein, though if we had more time, I might. I'm Tom Clements with Friends of the Earth, and I gave a handout about the MOX program, but I just want to make a comment about the import of foreign materials to Savannah Riverside. If you've been tracking the issue of the Canadian waste, you'll know that since the start, when it was presented, I had advocated that that material for non-proliferation purposes being denatured in Canada. The Canadian authorities have been silent about that until they met with a group of local citizens living near the Chalk River National Lab upstream from Ottawa. And they confirmed that the material can be solidified with the highly enriched uranium in it, and it could be denatured by mixing in low-level uranium into the material rather than bringing it to Savannah River. We had asked the Department of Energy to review that in a supplemental EIS. They refused to do it. It still hangs out there, and now that AECL has confirmed it, I hope DOE would revisit. For non-proliferation reasons, the wisest thing to do with that material, which is, in my opinion, not shipping liquid high-level waste across the country. It was also mentioned about the possible import of gas-cooled reactor fuel. If you don't know, this is the AVR experimental reactor at Jülich, Germany, and there are about 152 large castor casks with about 290,000 graphite balls that are impregnated with uranium about the size of a billiard ball that the German, the license for storage is expiring. The Germans I've spoken with and communicated with want that material dealt with in Germany. It originally did contain some U.S. origin HEU. It's unclear how much is remaining, but I can see a bit of a messy situation developing if those 152 casks or other casks would be transported across Germany. Who knows how this is going to play out, but as far as I know, there's no environmental statement analyzing the transport potential disposal in Germany or how it would be handled here, and I will fully expect that a EIS be done. I did give you this handout related to the MOX program, and rather than read it, which I was going to do, I just want to point out a few things. As you know, because of skyrocketing cost of the plutonium disposition program, an assessment has been done. It's a little unclear if some of it is continuing, but as I understand it, Secretary Moniz asked for questions about the assessment that had been done, and from what I've heard talking to congressional staff and others, it has looked at making the MOX program more efficient, which is extremely hard to do given the costs involved, immobilization of the plutonium and high-level waste, and of course disposal of plutonium in the waste isolation pilot plant from Savannah Riverside, which has already been done, and there are packages ready to be shipped once the budget is in place. That assessment will dictate what the FY 2015 budget is. I think, as I put in here, that they'll probably fund MOX and leave kind of as a placeholder with no final decision made. But I have heard from a number of people that the cost estimate for MOX, excluding decommissioning of the MOX plant, I've heard the figure $34 billion from reliable people. If you take that, if that's anywhere near ballpark or even something lower, and look out 20 years, this program is going to have a debilitating impact on the DOE budget for potentially decades. It's not sustainable, and has been said to me, the numbers don't add up for MOX. I included a Freedom of Information Act request in there that Savannah Riverside was gracious to provide, where the cost of packaging 1 kilo of plutonium disposed in WIP is about $100,000. Of course, that's not all the cost, and it's only on the packaging end. But if you compare that cost with the MOX cost, it doesn't compare. There are obviously problems with disposing of plutonium in the WIP facility, but DOE has already said that it meets the spent fuel standard, the security standard that was established in disposing of the material. And finally, I just included a little fact sheet that I'll present to the Tennessee Valley Authority's Regional Energy Resource Council, which is going to be talking about the future of Tennessee Valley Authority energy issues here at the end of January. I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. Anybody else? Clint.
I'm Clint Wolf with Citizens for Nuclear Technology Awareness. The point I wanted to make really is prompted by Terry's talk. I'm a longtime fan of SRNL, and I'm a longtime believer that it's a a wonderful asset to the state of South Carolina and to the region, and I don't think that's as widely recognized or supported by our state government, or for that matter by even regional and local governments, in terms of trying to do the things that seems to me any reasonable government would want to do, which are the things like providing infrastructure money so you can go do all these things that are so important to national security, that are so important to reclamation of nuclear materials from foreign countries. Those things cost money, and you know, it's kind of like having a bunch of passengers on a bus, and you ask one person to pay for the entire operation of the bus and all the maintenance and everything, and you're not going to get many takers. We have to decide as a nation, I think, that there is so much important work that's been done, and they've done a wonderful job of doing without. They've made wonderful arrangements with people like the Hydrogen Research Center, and the community's made an investment in that. There's a lot of good story to be had in spite of the fact that they don't get a dime to support the infrastructure of what they're trying to do for all these multiple customers. And I just think it would be very helpful if the governor's Nuclear Advisory Council could raise this up the flagpole as an issue and at least let ourselves be heard. We'd be certainly, as CNTA, we'd certainly be willing to support you in that or help you in that or do anything you want. But it's just an asset that we can't afford to let wither, and we need to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody else? Well, thank you very much. It was a good meeting. The next one will be April the 10th, if I've got my calendars right. So thank you very much for coming. See you then.